Molly. Molly, can you hear me?
What the hell was this?
All right. Very good. Let me try to get this right. Well, first, I would like to thank Professor Kwan for inviting me to this workshop. I'm very happy to see all these familiar faces and also the new guests here. And especially, I would like to acknowledge my long-term collaborator, Professor He Hongjian, there. I'm very glad to see that he's here with us. When I received the invitation to give the lecture here, and I was wondering what kind of level of the lectures I should prepare. And I guess it took me a while to decide what kind of lectures I'm going to give here. And though this is the linear collider workshop, but probably you already noticed that I'm not going to talk about linear collider physics at all. And I thought that to complete the scope of this school and the workshop, and in addition to the linear collider physics and LHC physics, I'm going to talk about something more recent, namely that is something to do with the current experiment, which is the Tevatron physics. And Tevatron is still running, and now there is this so-called round two of Tevatron, and the expected new discovery at the Tevatron is the to do with the top quark physics, and that's so-called single top physics, and that's basically what I'm going to talk about in these school type of lectures. And since I don't really know whether you can, you meaning the students, can take my lectures at ease, and I also prepare the fourth talk that's more toward the advanced researchers, and I will talk about some new physics models implications related to the neutrino mass, which means that I was exploring the idea of relating the mechanism for generating the neutrino masses to the collider phenomenology. And though it's put on the schedule, but I guess it depends on how well the first three talks go. And if I need to slow down, then I will skip the fourth talk. Then I will just slow down so that at the very least, for the students who come here can learn something from the school, from my lectures. Of course, you'll learn from the other talks, but I'm just talking about my talks. All right, so if you have any question, please do not hesitate to interrupt me at any time, okay? Good. With that long introduction, let me go to my first talk of this modeling. Since, as I said, that I will talk about this new discovery at round, expected new discovery at round two of the Tevatron, and which is a single top physics, then I thought I might as well give an introductory lecture on how to do collider phenomenology, hadron collider phenomenology. And for that, we need to have QCD. So in the quantum mechanics, quantum Coulomb dynamics, the QCD, somehow it's a chop out here, but I hope it's okay with you. Alright. So I assume that all you are at the advanced level in the graduate school. And so in the QCD, there's this is a very simple Lagrangian that describes the interaction of the fermions. Of course, in here, they are the quarks in the standard model. And also the gauge field of the gluon. So that's a very simple Lagrangian of for the QCD theory. quantum chromodynamics, and that describe, of course, fundamental couplings and the masses. So, why does the QCD play such a crucial role in the Heisenberg phenomenology? Now, the way we do experiment is we, like for example, a tabletron is a proton-antiproton collision that produces half quark. Now, to describe this proton system, it's quite complicated, in fact. So therefore, in Heisenberg physics, we use the proton model. So this is using the proton picture language to describe the interaction. And that proton model, namely this picture of the protons, have been verified experimentally for many, many years, at least 30 to 40 years, over a large number of experimental data. And furthermore, that in fact there's also theoretical foundation for that formalism, and that's been called as a quantization theory. And for that, here in China, such as Professor Ma Jianping has made a quite important contribution there as well. So here I would like to discuss how was such a simple proton picture that can describe the QCD, which is a theory that describes a strongly interacting system. So in fact, there are three quite unique features of the QCD. Now, first is the asymptotic freedom. And of course, that led to the Nobel Prize for that statement, the property of the QCD. So this is asymptotic freedom says that a strongly interacting, namely QCD is strongly interacting theory at long distance. But in fact, at short distance, meaning at high energy, it will become a weakly interacting theory. So that's the reason why that in a high energy collision, we are able to perform perturbative calculation in the QCD theory in order to predict the phenomena that eventually have been verified experimentally. So that's one very important feature of QCD, meaning that it's entirely freedom. So that's also a reason why we want to go to the higher energy scale to study the QCD interaction, because it's in that regime that the QCD interaction becomes weakly interacting system. So that means that the coupling constant, usually we call alpha s, becomes smaller if you go to the higher energy. The second feature of the QCD is about the infrared safety, meaning that in order to explain the data or to predict the interesting phenomena, we have to define the physical observables which are infrared safe. Namely that one cannot take any arbitrary prediction from a theory calculation and then claim that's the prediction of a QCD. One has to be very careful about the observables that can be compared with data. And these observables have to be such that they are infrared safe. Of course, experimentally, whatever be measured by the experimentalists, I mean by detectors, they are observables because the experimentalists, they observe it. It's really the theorist who could make such mistake for not constructing an infrared safe quantity. And that's something very important for doing the theory part of the study related to QCD interaction, meaning that one has to construct an observable which are the infrared safe. The third feature is about the factorization And after all, the reason that we can use the Patton model to describe the QCD interaction in the perturbative regime for systems that involve the hadrons, such as the proton-antiproton collision at the cybertron, or the proton-proton collision at LHC, then it has to be based on this very important property that the physical quantities that can be factorized into the long distance piece and the short distance piece. When we call long distance piece, meaning the piece that is not calculable but it's universal. And the short distance piece is a piece that depends on process, but it's infinitely safe and can be calculated. One such example in talking about the total production of, let's say, a top quark, then one can factorize the cross-section of the proton, antiproton, producing the top quark as the Parton distribution function convoluted with the constitution part cross-section. So Parton distribution function, they describe the probability of finding a certain type of parton inside the proton. For example, U quark. If we're talking about the top quark pair production, then it's the U quark and the anti-U quark that interact, fusion, and produce the top quark and antiton. But to find the probability of U quark inside proton, that is described by this long distance physics, meaning the Parton distribution function. That is not calculable at this moment, and hopefully one day, if we know QCD more, related to its strongly intelligent sector, then we'll be able to predict it. But at this moment, they are not calculable. But it's universal, meaning that if we measure the Parton distribution function from some experiment, then we can use that same Parton distribution function to predict the production for other experiments. Regarding the short distance piece, in this particular example, that will be the cross-section for UU bar produce TT bar. And that is something that can be calculated in the perturbative QCD. So let me give a little bit more detail about symptomatic freedom. And so this slide collects all the determination of the alpha S from many different type of experiments that determine the alpha S. And since this is the effective coupling is evaluated at a certain scale, in this case, this is alpha S, the strong coupling, so it's G squared over 4 pi. Evaluated at MD scale. So you see that all the data are consistent. One can also plot the coupling alpha S as a function of the scale. So that's the horizontal axis of scale Q. So you see that at a different scale, there will be different strengths of the alpha S. And again, the theory has been compared to the data and therefore to extract out the information of alpha S. So this is just to show that indeed if you go to higher energy, you see the coupling indeed decrease. And that's the feature of QCD and its symptomatic freedom, and that's also the work that being awarded Nobel Prize. So the key, anyway, I want to point out here, probably, can you see it back there? Top? No? All right. So this is the key concept here is this ultraviolet divergence is Green function normalization and remission group equations, anomalous dimension, and so forth and so on. Those are the details that one need to understand in order to fully appreciate this feature here. So now, let me go back to a little bit about the scale, since we're talking about that the alpha S were wrong, and then if you go to higher energy scale, then the coupling becomes smaller. We also talk about that the, when we describe a physical process such as the antiproton collision producing top quark, then there are few scales involved in this type of process. So, for example, if we talk about the proton or antiproton, then we are talking about the bound state system. From the picture of standard model, the proton is made of the UUV quarks. So they are not elemental particles. And therefore that there's some nuclear scale involved here. Then typically that's a binding energy at a few hundred MeV level. And that's the kind of scale. But, and also that when we talk about, for example, top quark production, then the top quark mass is around 175 GeV. So it's about 175 times heavier than the proton. And that's a sort of the kind of the large energy scale, and that's sort of the experimental scale, say top quark mass scale, some large scale there. And if we talk about, let's say, new physics, like Professor Kwan in his opening remark stated that most of us believe that there must be new physics beyond the standard model. And one such obvious argument is about the existence of the dark matter and the necessity of the large CP violation effect. So in that case, that one has to have some new physics, and ultimately that we also like to include the gravity inside the whole theory of the particle physics, then that would be the scale of this Planck scale. And so that would be the 10 to the 19 GeV scale. So you see that there is a huge, large range of this energy scale. And in the low energy regime here, what we need to do is to have the to deal with this soft type of physics, long distance physics. Then we need to be able to separate. That's the factorization. They separate something that is the low energy scale, and that's from something that's something that we can calculate at the high energy. So to relate these different scale, and usually that we use the relation group equation to relate physics at different scale. For example, we talk about the particle distribution function. And particle distribution function can be measured and determined at one energy scale, some energy scale, let's say 10 GeV, just for the sake of argument. And then the particular QCD can then tell us what's the probability for this particular particle at a different scale, and let's say 100 GeV. So again, that is controlled by this relation group equation, and that's usually called a Dirac equation, to tell us how a particle function evolved from one scale to another scale. Earlier, we also saw that the strong coupling after S also runs from one scale to another scale. Again, it's controlled by our relation group equation. So all this being provided by the theory of the QCD. So what to do with this long distance physics and associated with this soft and the collinear type of singularity in the particular QCD? So what we need to do is to identify physical observables which are not sensitive to these singularities. And that's the reason why we call it the infrared safe quantity. So the infrared safe quantities are the quantities that is not sensitive to the soft or collinear type of singularity in the QCD. For example, the total cross-section, that's the inclusive cross-section itself, is infrared safe. Because the kind of singularity that might exist in the collinear and soft regime, that soft collinear singularity, from the this so-called real emission diagrams will cancel with the kind of contribution from the virtual diagrams. So when we calculate the total inclusive rate in QCD, then all these have to cancel. So that leads to something that is finite and is implicit. But of course, when we do the calculation to compare with data, we are not only interested in the total possession, we are also interested in various distributions, many different kinds of kinematic distribution, for example. And indeed, we need that in order to compare with the data, because the detector typically is not able to detect all the final state particles. And so that's related to what's so-called the kinematical acceptance, meaning that for any interaction in the typical type of collider, such a Hadron collider such as Tevatron, then we are not able to see all the final state particles. Many of them will just go into a beam pipe direction, for example. So we need to construct, to be able to calculate something, some observables, which is not just a total rate. And so this is the way to do it. This essential feature of these infrared state physical quantities is defined as the following. The observables that we define must be such that it's insensitive to whether it's n or n plus 1 particle contributed. If, as long as that n plus 1 and n particle have the same kinematics. For example, that if all these particles, they're more or less moving together, and then this should not be able to be distinguished from this picture. So which means that all these should be lumped together and called an object, and that object what we call jet. So for example, that this will be the three jet type of signature. And that's why we define as a jet. Jet, by its definition, in this definition, is an infrared safe observable. But not the pattern itself. It's not this pattern, that pattern, that pattern. Okay, so this is what's the reason that we need to introduce the jet algorithm, for example, in studying the QCD phenomena, because we need to define something that is infrared safe. Okay, instead of talking about producing 3 pattern, 4 pattern, 6 pattern, now we have to talk about jet. That's the reason. The next step is then we need to use the factorization theory to relate to the QCD pattern model. So, as I explained earlier, the factorization theory is to separate to factorize these physical observables into a piece that is calculable and a piece that's not calculable, but universal. You see, that's a very important property. If it were not universal, then it would not be useful at all, right? And it's really because that it's universal, for this non-calculable part is universal, that we could determine it from one experiment and then use that result to predict for other experiments and to make a useful prediction. So, in terms of the formula, that will look like this. For example, the total cross-section will be the part that's the long-distance part and times the part, the constituent part that can be calculated. And this is one other example than the previous one I gave to you. This is the example. For example, that we want to produce the hadrons in the final state, then like E plus E minus collision produce hadrons. Then what we do is then we calculate this part is the E plus E minus go to, for example, quarks. And then convolute with a fragmentation function that will describe the probability of forming a certain type of hadron from a given type of quarks, for example. So again, this is a formalism that factorizes a short-distance part physics from a long-distance part physics. And the short-distance part depends on the process. And then, but long distance path does not depend on process, but it's universal, though non-calculable, right? You are probably more familiar with randomization than factorization. So in here, let me make this analogy between these randomization and factorization. Randomization is to do with the ultraviolet behavior, so it's ultraviolet randomization. And factorization, as we said, is to factorize a long distance piece path from the short distance piece path. So it's to factorize this collinear and soft type of physics from rest. So this is the useful table to show the analogy between those two concepts. Normally, when we talk about the ultraviolet randomization, we were dealing with the Green function. But when we talk about factorization, we're dealing with a physical cross-section, and which could include the differential cross-section as well, not just the total cross-section. And correspond to this randomization constant in the randomization procedure, then this is what we call the Parton distribution function, which is something, as we said, that that's universal. And then for the half part of cross-section, in this case, will be equal to this Partonian cross-section divided by this piece of this Pontryagin function. Meaning that we take a Partonian cross-section and we separate that, factorize that into two pieces. One piece is this F, the one that to do with the long-distance physics, that's not calculable. And the rest is something we can calculate it, and that will be this half part of cross-section. For the part that we cannot calculate it, namely this Pontryagin function, then how that evolved is an energy scale, and that's described by this equation, and it's called splitting function. So that's the well-known Dirac equation. And that corresponding to the randomization, that will be this anomalous dimension. When we use the RG equation, and then once we solve this RG equation, then effectively we already sum up the effect to all order in the perturbative expansion. Because it's just numerically that we have sum up all these to all order. So that's that resum. The effect has been resummed. So this table is to show us that, in fact, this characterization, though to many of you, sounds to be new, but if you are familiar with randomization procedure, and they are quite similar. It's really, there's really one-to-one correspondence here. For example, let's talk about these, Lagrange-Hadron scattering. Take this as an example. Say, suppose now we have, let's say this side is from, say, electron. So electron radiate a photon, and this side is some hadron, let's say proton. So this is the electron-hadron collision process, and therefore this is the photon scattered by this, the virtual photon scattered by this hadron, and that's the experiment. And suppose we want to produce something. This H indicates not Higgs boson, it's a hadron. Produce some hadrons, and then we can factorize these into in this picture here. That's a Parton picture. So in this case, you see that this is what I was saying earlier. The way to describe this interaction is to use this factorization theorem to factorize this into the piece. This piece that is calculable. Because this is the interaction of the photon with Parton. So this Parton can be quarks, for example. So it's photon and quark scattering produce something. And there's this part, another part is this Pontryagin function is to describe this, what's the probability of finding this quark out of this hadron. So that's a Pontryagin function and times this half part. So this half-part cross-section is perturbative and calculable, but it can also contain something, a large quantity. Because this is an expansion of alpha s, so it can be alpha s to some power, and maybe that there's also some larger logs, and that to do with the different energy scale in the problems. I will come back to that later. So this is what we do. So we have experiment, because this presents what's been measured. It measures the lepton and the hadron collide and produce some particular hadrons. But it's just that instead of dealing with this directly, we use the factorization theorem to factorize this process, this physical process, into these two pieces. And then there's a theory input in here, is to calculate this hadronic part of cross-section. Given the QCD theory, we know how to calculate it. And then using factorization to relate these experimental measurements with this theory prediction in the partial model. Okay? And of course that there's a very big effort going on at the Michigan State University that is to provide these Parton distribution function so that the physicists around the world, the hydrogen physicists around the world, could use these set of Parton function for calculating all different kind of processes, such as Higgs boson production and supersymmetry particle production and so forth and so on. And that distribution is called CTAP, Parton distribution function. And there's another group which also provides a useful a similar type of Parton function is the MRST that's given at Durham. All right. So again, I'm repeating what I was saying, but here I show this in this picture here. For example, instead of dealing with lepton-hadron collider, so now let's talk about hadron-hadron collider. So now this time, assuming that this proton anti-proton collide produce something. So typically, that this is the kind of pictorial process. We have the proton and proton anti-proton collide. And then the picture here we use is to think this as a parton-parton collision. So this could be quads, say U and U bar, and produce T and T bar, for example. So through this interaction, that's QCD, that is a U and U bar fusion produce a gluon and spread to T and T bar, for example. And usually in that process, there are also other soft gluons or collinear gluons, those being produced together with this TT bar. For example, from the initial state of the U and U bar quark, they can radiate gluons, the collinear gluon or soft gluons, and those are those collinear and soft type of gluons. And maybe this is some top quark, for example, and the top quark can decay into the B quark and W boson further decay into lepton and neutrino, for example. So in the final state, you will see the leptons, you will see the neutrinos. When I say C neutrinos, I mean that you see the consequence of neutrinos, which is the missing transverse momentum. And maybe some other part is a function of the soft hadrons, because the QCD is a confinement that we don't see the free light quark or gluons, instead we see a whole bunch of hadrons. And that's precisely what's going on in there, that we see all these hadrons in the final state. So this is the typical type of the process, and so that's been described here, is that indeed this is the hadrons of a proton, antiproton. Final state will produce a whole bunch of leptons and hadrons, like electrons, neutrinos, and pions, kaons. And then this is the part that we do calculation using our theory. So this could be QCD, could be standard model, could be beyond standard model. So it all being that one can do a calculation in here. And then this fluctuation, the one we, this dashed line represented, is that we could factorize this physical process into this piece, this long distance piece, that is described by this universal Parton distribution function. For the given the example I just gave to you, this would describe the probability of finding a u-quark and anti-u-quark, for example. And in here, the final stage, then again, that how to get a particular type of hadron from a given Parton, let's say quark or gluon. So again, that's to do with what's called fragmentation function. If we want to look at a particular type of hadron, like a pion or kaon, or B, meson, for example. So that, of course, then one need to deal this part with these hybridization models. Or sometimes we want to say how many jets be produced at this particular collider with this particular energy. And in that, again, we need to introduce the jet algorithm to define an observable that's imperfect state. So let me go a little bit in detail about this Parton model. Let me Parton, when we use the Parton distribution function, what are these Partons? So the Partons in here represented by this A, and that's the finding this Parton inside the hadron, and then Parton and the say photon scatter produce the final state particles. And these Partons in the QCD series, they are the quarks and gluon. Yeah. So these are all kind of quarks, up quark, down quark, strange charm, bottom, even top, if the energy is large enough. And gluons as well. And so therefore that in the QCD theory, that we know that we need to have a program to determine these distribution functions, these Parton distribution functions. And that's what that I just told you about, this global analysis that determine the Parton distribution functions. And since these distribution functions are universal, meaning that it's independent of the processes or the colliders we look at, it, whether it's electron-hadron collider or hadron-hadron collider. And therefore that one can extract this information from the whole class of the data. And indeed, that precisely what has been done is you look at the data, not just the electron-hadron collider, but also the hadron-hadron colliders, and then compile all these data to determine these set of Parton distribution functions. So that's the this Parton model in the QCD. So in terms of formula, that will be again is just that this is the Parton distribution function, and then times the constituent part of cross section, and this is the part we know how to calculate it, and this is the part that we can determine from a set of data. And then it's the same function that can be used to calculate for the other processes. And furthermore, that we also know how these Parton distribution function evolve from one scale to another scale using this equation, the sort of the graph equation. So because again, that's relate the Parton distribution function at one energy scale to another scale, so that we can use the Parton distribution function determined from one experiment to predict for the other data at a different energy or even at any different machine. All right, so because I want to talk about the higher order calculation in the top part production, therefore let me explain about this calculation scaling here. So take one example. Suppose I take a charm production instead of top. Let me take charm as an example. How do we do a calculation in the QCD theory? Now, we use a Parton model to calculate let's say, the photon and charm, scattering produces the charm in the final state. Now, so if we count this guy as a leading order calculation, then this is the part, naively you see that there's no alpha s in the hard part, and this has alpha s in the hard part. So this will be, if you look at this hard part, then this will be the higher order, one order higher than this order. However, it's very important to subtract this part of contribution. What is this contribution? This is the contribution that this gluon, when that split into this C and C bar, and this C and C bar, they are more or less collinear. So when this C and C bar more or less collinear, in fact, this part of contribution has already been included in the definition of the charm, this Poulenc-Dirichlet function. All right? So, you see, it's quite complicated in the QCD theory. It's not that you can just take the counting of the alpha s and then count what's the leading order contribution, what's the next leading order contribution. And all this complication is precisely due to the singularity we just talked about, namely the soft or collinear type of singularity. Because it's that part of singularity that has to be absorbed into the definition of the pattern distribution function. Because those are the origin of the long distance physics. And that we already include them into the definition of the pattern distribution function. That's the reason why we need to take these higher order cross-section and subtract out the piece that this C and C bar, they are collinear. Because the part of contribution, I mean, this is a part of calculation in here, this part is already included in the definition of this Poisson distribution function. So when we sum these two up, we already double count this piece. So that's why we need to subtract it. Okay? So this is a very important part of the QCD calculation. When we calculate any processes that has something to do with the quark or gluons, either in the QCD or in the standard model, electroweak, or in new physics production, it's very important that when you do the higher order calculation, you need to be careful not to double count the contribution such as this type. Okay? And let me go further to explain a little bit more. Is that the reason for that is if you go to the higher energy, then in fact that if the energy is large enough, then these two really have the same contribution. And similarly that if you go to the threshold region, then these two have more or less the same contribution. So that's the reason why that you have, when you do the calculation, you see that you have to take this leading order diagram plus this next leading order diagram and then subtract out the part that is overlapping. Right? So this is the part that's been double counted already. So that's the reason why it's important to do calculation. So any question so far? As I say, if you have questions, don't hesitate to ask. Okay. All right. Okay. In here, what I'm indicating here, if that the typical scale is large compared, in here, this mu indicates the large scale. Yeah. This scale could be the energy or momentum. And then the m is the mass of the charm quark. So if this ratio is very large, then in fact these two contributions are the same. Because that in here you pick up this alpha s can be large log due to this collinear type of enhancement, and this contribution will more or less cancel with this diagram. But if you into the threshold region, then in fact this contribution in here and the definition of Poisson function are more or less the same. Because when we say charm quark, it's really, if you look inside, or what's in here is really just this. This charm from the parton, from the proton, really come from the gluon split to CC bar. And therefore that these two are the same if the typical scale is at mass of the threshold. I mean, the mass of the charm mass, for example. And so that's the reason to that you have to do this calculation, because only then you will not double count the contribution from this region. Yes?
How to do that subtraction?
How to do this subtraction, yes. So that's good. So that's something that I will talk about next in here. So the way we do it in here is that more technical detail. So I will just mention it. I will not have time to go through the detail. When we do the subtraction of this term, indeed, it's a very important question. Of course, this is asked by distinguished professors. It must be good. So in here, you see this, how much you have to subtract that out. It's a very tricky question. It's a very important question, and that requires really understanding of the this regulation and the scheme dependence. So that's the part in here. Maybe we need to follow a certain type of procedures, the prescriptions. And in fact, depending on the prescription you choose, that will lead to a different set of Hartong distributed function. Okay? Like, currently the most popular set of distributions are given by so-called MS bar. It's a modified minimal subtraction scheme. So you need to define which scheme that you're going to use in order to define the Hartong distributed function, and for that, then that will lead to these the proper subtraction term. So the one that we use in the defining the CPAC Hartong distributed function is this procedure layout in here. That's the so-called CWZ realization scheme. So in here is that we have to separate the part called the heavy quark from the rest, which are the light flavor, by using this particular subtraction prescription. Namely that when the diagrams, if there's a heavy quark line, for example in here the charm quark is considered to be heavy quark in this example, then in that case then we use the zero momentum subtraction. But if the diagrams that only contain the light quark lines, then we use the MS bar subtraction scheme to define the proper counter terms in order to get the renormalized Hartong distributed function. So as I say that since I'm not able to go into detail, I will just leave this here. And these, though I use this as a charm as example, but the reason I mention it is because it has the important consequences to, for example, top quark production. So there's a WB fusion produce top. And W in this case can come from, let's say, U quark. So there's a U quark radiate W boson turn into a D quark. And then this W boson scattered with B quark produce top. So that's a single top production. And this, if you count this as leading order, then similarly, like I said, this diagram contains one alpha S, one additional alpha S, and this, you might naively count this as next leading order. If you sum these two up, then you know you made a mistake. The mistake you made precisely is that when this B and B bar, they are more or less collinear, then this contribution is already included into the definition of the B quark. Therefore, one needs to subtract the part that being over, that being a double counted. Similarly, that in the Higgs production, again, that, for example, in here, one can talk about, I don't know what happened here. Sorry about that. This Higgs production, this really grew on connector here. For example, let me label this B, B bar fusion produce Higgs boson. So there's a B quark, NDB produce Higgs boson, and then the there's no alpha S in here. This is just the Yukawa coupling for B, B bar fusion produce Higgs boson. In here, if you do next leading order, this can B and the gluon fusion produce Higgs and B, but again, you cannot just take a sum of those two. You have to subtract out the piece that this B, B bar collinear. Because that's a piece, again, is defined into the B quark PDF already. So that's, again, another example that one has to be careful about what so-called higher order configuration. So how many more minutes left?
Eight,
thank you. Okay, any questions? Yes.
When I came to the single company production, at the next meeting order, I think it's me.
Yes.
I think you want to define how hard is the final impact data. Because the second process, second day work, maybe a different process, it will be hard to check if it's hard enough.
Yes.
The first day work, you have only one top part.
Right.
And the second day work, you have one top part plus one feature.
Yes.
So if a feature is too soft to cost the same process,
yes.
The final state is only one top part.
Yes.
So I think that maybe in your calculation, that if the feature has
very good. All right. Yeah. Okay. Very good. That's Professor Yang Jingming already pointed out this very important part of this single top technology that one has to be aware. And in fact, that's the reason that I gave a title to Professor Kwan as a precision collider physics. It's precisely that kind of question one needs to ask. Namely, when you do a calculation, how do you compare with data? If you want to compare with certain type of experimental measurements, then what kind of calculation needs to be done? And all these questions will be addressed in my next two lectures. And that's I was specifically talking about the next link order calculation to the single top production. Then I will get into the detail. Thank you. All right. Given the time, the very little time left, I guess I will not go through the rest of these. This is just the another round of repeating what I just said by using the DIS deep inelastic scattering data to explain what I just said again. But, page down. Right. So this is just some explicit result of calculation. To show that the kind of log I mentioned to you that indeed will appear, and that's the kind of log I just talked about, those log. And for that, then one has to reorganize our perturbative calculation, and this calculation is then to be to one absorb this contribution is this large log is to absorb those into the definition of the Parton distribution function. Remember that I told you that the reason to have those large logs, that's what so-called singularity, yeah, is due to the collinear and soft gluon contribution. And for that kind of large log, I mean, the way we deal with that is to absorb those into the definition of Parton distribution function. That's what, when we factorize into long and short distance pieces, and we already put those part contribution into what we call the part contribution function. So by doing that, then we have already resummed these large log contributions. And the effect is to stabilize our prediction of in the perturbative calculation. So although that our calculation in the hard part, quasi-session, can be just either leading order or next leading order, but because the way we deal with this calculation, we have absorbed all these large logs into what we call the Parton distribution function. Therefore, our calculation is more stable. Yeah, will be less dependent on this arbitrary scale that one needs to specify in order to calculate a given cross-section. So again, I will get into those details in the next two lectures. Okay, so the rest is just the details, and I, as I say, I don't want to rush them in here, but I just this will be included in my the file anyway. So if you're interested, you can look into it. And again, basically those can be summarized into these that again we have the leading order process, we have the so-called next leading order processes. And when we do the next leading order calculation, one has to be careful not to double count the region that these protons, they are collinear with, for example, this gluon, and because that have contribution, the large log have a contribution has already been encoded into the definition of these protons in here. So meaning that when we sum them up, then in fact we should subtract out the piece that this is collinear. And what's left in here then is something typical, meaning that it's just the alpha s times something of order 1, not some large log, right? Because large log has been already encoded into this higher order pattern diffusion function. So what's left in here is just typical higher orders, alpha s times order 1 type of contribution. And that's why that we can have a precise and reliable prediction. All right, so there you go. The next two lectures, and that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to apply these to the Tapua phenomenology. And depends on how well you take it, then as I said, then the, either I do it in the next two lectures or to next three, all right? All right, so that's it for now. So thank you. It didn't seem this working to me. So very good.
Okay, thanks. Nice and clear the review. Question or comment?
So it's clear.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.
Now is coffee break. So.
Yeah.